Hello and welcome to this episode of Let's Talk Security Testing, the podcast where we deep dive into all things security testing. My name is Ben Armstrong.
I'm Tom Ballin.
And today we are going to focus on a topic that I think is close to both our hearts, and it's how to get more value out of the human side of security testing. So, best place to start, what's wrong with how it's done at the moment? I put it to you, Tom, that most time that that pen testers spend on tests is wasted. Do you agree?
Yes.
Should we just end the podcast?
No, so, I mean, I'm going to throw the question back to you. Let's start with what people believe they're buying when they buy a penetration test. You know, you've been selling penetration tests for years. Most customers probably have some idea what it is that they're buying, but I don't think they know the full picture. Where do you see what people believe they're buying to differ from maybe what they're actually getting?
Okay. Well, if we stay away from their reason for buying, because that's probably another podcast, and focus on what they think they're buying, ultimately it's a human to get a baseline of a system, right? A baseline on the security of a system. So the idea being that whilst I think it's a fairly known thing that a human isn't going to turn over every single stone they can possibly find, because that's the job of a scanner. The expectation is that a human will do more of a deep dive into a system. Largely a combination of art and science. You know, they're going to be using their brain, their hacker brain, a bit like how an external threat actor would, to see where various different vulnerabilities take them. You might find something here, you might investigate it. I think, as we've discussed on previous podcasts, just because a system behaves in a way that it's not supposed to doesn't mean it's a vulnerability. And often it takes a human to actually run through those situations to get to the crux of it. So to come back to your point, what do they think they're buying? They think they're going to get a baseline level of security assurance as an output. They're going to get a report that documents that, and they're going to, at least in their interpretation, gain a level of confidence that should that system come under attack, that it's not going to be trivial for an attacker to be able to cause significant damage.
And how much do you think they're aware that what they're buying is people running tools versus people doing consulting?
Good question. I think there's an expectation with everyone that they run tools. I mean, these questions come up all the time, right? Sometimes customers will even say, what tools are you going to use? Which is always a bit of a fun one to try and respond to. There's an acceptance that a degree of automation will be used, but an emphasis on the human side. They're expecting a human to go all the way up to maybe not quite exploit, but go all the way up to exploiting something. They're expecting there to be virtually no what are effectively pure false positives. You know, there might be areas where things are misrepresented or whatever due to a lack of context, but there shouldn't be any outright false positives where something is just simply not a vulnerability. So they're expecting that in terms of quality. And obviously all the standard stuff that comes in with any professional services, they're expecting communication, they're expecting professionalism, they're expecting a level of knowledge superior to that they have themselves. So they're expecting to be working with an expert.
I think that level of knowledge is an interesting point because, you know, my personal experience in security testing, and I've been having this conversation with many other security testers over the last few days, is that a lot of people, when they buy somebody in to come and test their security, they assume that it is then that person's responsibility to have that level of knowledge or seek it out through technical testing means. And in a lot of cases, there is information that an organization already has that if they imparted on their security tester to begin with, would mean that tester could actually just get on with the things that the organization doesn't know about. You know, what I mean by that is organizations know about lots and lots of vulnerabilities that exist within their systems. They know about areas of their systems that are probably going to be more insecure than other areas of their systems. And they, you know, they know exactly how their systems operate, how their systems interact with each other, and how they're architected. But if you go in as a security tester, sometimes an organization will say, yeah, absolutely, we'll be forthcoming with all of that information. More often than not, they'll say, well, aren't you supposed to be figuring this out? You know, an application test, people say all the time, when you ask them for credentials, they're like, isn't that supposed to be your a test?
Yeah. And that generally is a litmus test for the maturity of the person looking to book the test. And there's a bit of a soundbite I have in relation to your earlier point around context in. A lot of people complain about context out, not so much with security testers, although it does happen, but certainly with automated tools. But the more context you get in, the more context you're going to get out, right? People talk about, well, you know, I want context about this vulnerability. I want to understand where it sits, what its exploitability is, you know, how important is it, and how many different ways are there to fix it if this first one doesn't work out. But context in matters towards that, right? What the context that you give the tester will ultimately determine the quality of the context they can give you back in return when they've found vulnerabilities. If I don't know the criticality of the system that I'm testing, it becomes very difficult to stress the importance of that when looking at putting the fix in place. If I don't know if there's any nuances with your tech stack, i.e. this vulnerability comes up every year because we simply just can't fix it because we do things this way. If that information doesn't exist within the brain of the tester, then they can't possibly know to flag it under those conditions. And you just end up in this vicious circle.
I think, yeah, I don't want to get on a soapbox too much about the challenges and the relationships between security testers and the end user. But I do think it's fair to say that there is, in a lot of cases, there is still a lack of mutual understanding about exactly what that security tester is wanted for. You know, I think that when you walk into an organization, it can quite often be difficult, not necessarily from the tester's perspective or from the customer's perspective, but it can be quite difficult to get to that mutual agreement that actually my time is best spent here or there. So the security tester naturally end up spending a significant amount of their time running tools that maybe the internal team have already run, finding vulnerabilities that maybe the internal team already know about, or digging around in areas that the team don't really care about. You know, I've given examples in the past where, you know, somebody can spend an entire day trying to test for SQL injection, for example, where they found it and they really, really want to demonstrate the exploitability. So at the end of that day, having demonstrated the exploitability, realize that that database is nothing but publicly available information anyway, and there's no real impact to being able to exploit it. Whereas if they had if they'd got that depth of knowledge to begin with to understand that that database is probably not the crown jewels within the business, or they'd clarified when they first found that potential issue that actually that SQL injection wouldn't amount to very much, or likely wouldn't amount to very much, then they could have been focusing on the areas that the business would have much preferred them to be focusing on.
Yeah. So just to be clear, most of a pen tester's time is wasted because, one, lack of context means that they're misdirected in a lot of ways, or a lot of work ends up being unused in the way in terms of the output. What other reasons are there for pen tester's time being wasted?
Repetition, like I say, the fact that even with an annual assessment, right? If you bring somebody in to test a system from top to bottom, and then a year later you bring somebody else in to test that same system from top to bottom, and that system, you've only updated 3 or 4 features and functionalities, but you've not told that tester that you've updated those 3 or 4 functionalities. They're going to spend a long, long time testing the same things that were tested the last year and the year before and the year before and the year before. And while every now and then it's good to go back and sanity check the things that have been looked at in the past, that is obviously a massive, massive amount of wasted time when they could have been focusing on the areas that actually have had work done to them.
So just on that point, right? Okay, so let's just, for our listeners, let's just walk through. Let's just walk through something very simply here, right? So I'm sure everybody has booked a test before, and I'm sure that test has come out as 5 days for a lot of people. 5 day test. You've just come in. I run a e-commerce company. I want you to test my back end CMS. Mm-hmm. My understanding would be that you're going to spend 5 days, some sort of lead hacker, and you're going to, you know, spend all 5 days, or at least most of those 5 days, finding serious vulnerabilities and working like a threat actor would, only to culminate in writing me a document that's going to allow me to work on the fixes. Tell me how far away from reality I am.
Probably about 4 days away from reality. Okay. You know, I think realistically, day one will be familiarising yourself with the system first mm-hmm. and foremost. You've got to actually spend some time understanding what it is that you're supposed to be testing, how it's supposed to work, so that then you can start to consider what things you can do outside of what's the intent. You know, computer misuse is the act of making the system do something other than what it was intended to do. And that's fundamentally what we're trying to emulate as security testers. So that's day one. Day two is probably configuring automation, right? There's lots and lots and lots of vulnerabilities that can be found through automated means that will take a person a very long time to be able to find, especially if you're talking about a large e-commerce site with hundreds and hundreds of different input fields. So we'll run automated scanners. Just configuring those, tuning those to the environment and getting those going is an entire day. And then there's a whole separate day, day three, where you're going to be going through those results, sanity checking them, removing the false positives and the noise from them, and trying to comprehend how some of those vulnerabilities might be chained together or might be applied within the context of the environment. Day four, you're probably going to then look at the areas that haven't been covered yet. If you've got the depth of understanding about the tool, then you'll understand what areas that tool's not particularly strong at, whether it's testing for business logic flaws or whether it's testing for access control issues, for example. You know, you will dive into those specific parts, those more sophisticated and complex vulnerabilities, and you will look across the system where you can for those. You won't get 100% coverage because it's a large system and you've only got a day in order to be able to do those elements. But that's what you'll spend that day doing. And then day five, you'll basically formulate your summary. You'll write your report. You'll describe all of the vulnerabilities that have been found so far and communicate those to a management audience and communicate those to a technical audience, like the engineers that are supposed to be going away and fixing it. So, you know, 4 out of 5 of those days, you are not doing that thing that only a person can do. You are not testing for sophisticated vulnerabilities that can't be found using tools. Because without that context about exactly what it is you're supposed to be focusing on, you have to try and be, you know, you have to cover a bit of breadth and a bit of depth and strike a bit of a balance.
Makes sense. So you're telling me that potentially only one of the 5 days that I've got you in for will you actually be doing the thing that I suspect I would have thought you'd be doing every day?
Without the context to understand what's already been done, yeah, I don't think that's particularly avoidable. You know, I think if you go into a doctor's surgery and you say, "Doctor, I think I've broken a bone," and then refuse to tell that doctor which bone you think might be broken, they will poke and prod you for hours until they figured that out. You know, it's not the conducive way to being able to actually spend your time in the most efficient way.
So we've established that lots of time's wasted, but what can we do about it? So you know, how can we fix this? Both, you know, are there any quick ways to fix it or make it better? And what is the sort of long-term goal to solving the problem completely?
I think a brief at the start of any security testing, just to say what's happened previously, not necessarily just what security vulnerabilities have been identified previously, although that is obviously valuable, but what engineering work has happened recently, you know, a little bit under the surface to understand how you go from point A to point B in terms of your product engineering will help a security tester know which areas are probably worth focusing on. So even just sitting down with somebody, if you are doing an annual assessment, for example, at the start of that, for half an hour, and just saying to them, you know, look, here is the concerns that I've got, here is the things that I think might be relevant to you, and having a little bit of a discussion would be incredibly valuable. Flipping that on its head, what I think would be more valuable is not actually having to do an annual assessment, and instead bringing people in specifically just to focus on the things as and when you've got the concerns about them, or as and when there might be the potential for a vulnerability to be introduced. So instead of you changing 50 form fields over the next 6 months and then bringing in a security tester and trying to say, I think it was this field and this field and this field that got changed. Instead, every time you change that form field, bring somebody in for an hour or two just to look at that and effectively keep that record of the security system up to date continuously.
Yeah. And I guess the challenge with all of this is memory, right? Is what you're basically saying is a solution is ask the person to recall what they might have done, or maybe look back through their ticketing system, or maybe ask their, you know, because you might not be dealing with the product manager or the developer, ask the product manager or developer what they think are. But it doesn't sound very foolproof. What other alternatives are there for creating a more scientific process that works every time?
Well, this is intelligence, right? This is precursor to vulnerability testing. It's aggregating the intelligence that is valuable in this context to the security tester. And you know, if you look at how intelligence is collected in any other form of security, it's by tapping into resources that businesses already have. Businesses collect a massive amount of data about what's going on. They've got change management systems, ticketing systems, code repositories. They've got records of what's actually occurred over the last 3, 6, 9, 12 months that are very, very detailed and very, very valuable. So if you've got a way to be able to sift through that information and actually be able to pick out, oh, you know, this ticket relates to a new API endpoint being deployed, therefore that's one that the security tester should probably have a quick read over before they start their testing, then obviously you can avoid having to try and play this memory recall game, but you don't have to introduce a new process and a new way of capturing the information that doesn't already exist within your business.
Yeah, and this does two things, right, to your earlier acronym, for your you know, 5-day test thing. This directs the tester to specific places because that's where the changes are. So we can maybe start to chop into that that time spent discovering and figuring out the app. And it also helps with giving extra context to the tester, so that maybe when we're reporting things and writing things up, we don't waste as much time looking at things that aren't as important. But we lost a good couple of days to automated testing as well. How does that factor into this alternative approach? How can businesses make sure that they're not paying humans to run tools, and actually tools and humans can work in harmony, but humans are doing what humans are good at and tools are doing what tools are good at?
Having a record of what tool coverage you've got is pretty important. You know, understanding what tools have been run and what vulnerabilities they are capable of being able to find means that you can then tell a person you don't need to worry about this, you don't need to worry about that, and you can focus on the other areas. You need to be open and honest with the person that's doing the testing to say, you know, these are the tools that were run, these are the vulnerabilities that were already found. And if you are that transparent with them, then they can operate from an informed perspective. You know, if you know you've got 50 instances of cross-site scripting within your application, and you know that if another instance pops up, then your Dask scanner is probably very capable of being able to find it, then you can tell your security tester, don't worry about cross-site scripting. We know that's an issue for us. That's something we're already working on. What we're really concerned about is credential stuffing or SQL injection or one of the other, you know, list of dozens of vulnerabilities that people might need to be concerned about. You know, refining it down, being transparent with them about what you've got the capacity for and what you've not got the capacity for, I think is the place to start.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess, so we've got those alternative approaches. Separate the responsibilities of humans and testers more, provide more context to the testers before they carry out testing. This applies in traditional scenarios or in continuous scenarios. So if I've done all that and I've got all that set up and I've got my process set up, I know what I'm going to do. Where are we looking for the human testers? Where you know, naturally, people listening to this might have always traditionally used a pen testing consultancy for that pen test. But what we're talking about here is less of a traditional pen testing approach and more of a modern forward thinking one. Mm-hmm. So where can you get those humans from to carry out their part in the process?
There's a few places that I would go if I was looking for human testing. You know, I mean, ideally, it's always been my experience that I've built teams of security testers, so I've hired people and I've actually had an internal security testing capability, and obviously that's got massive advantages because all of that richness of context, once they've been upskilled on that, once they understand your environment, they retain that knowledge. You're not cycling through different vendors and you're not losing that information. So having an internal team is obviously the go-to if you've got the capacity to be able to do that. But not everybody does have that capacity, you know, either because internal teams are hard to scale. So if you have periods where you have a much greater demand, then obviously hiring and then reducing the size of your team is not a particularly tenable solution. You know, alternatives are consultancies. Traditional consultancies are a place to go. Their ability to do these smaller, focused little pieces of testing will vary. You know, some are more agile in their approach than others, but typically you're still talking about hiring people for a number of days rather than a few hours to look at a particular field or a particular functionality. So I think, you know, bug bounties are being more and more at the forefront of this sort of testing approach. You know, being able to put out to the market and say, you know, crowdsource effectively your testing capability means you've got an endless resource, and that it's within their best interest to be looking at the places that vulnerabilities are likely to be and the places that you want them to look at, because they get paid out when they actually find the vulnerabilities to begin with.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So hire, crowdsource, or sort of halfway house between the two would be looking at the consultancies, but I suggest treat that one with a pinch of salt, because naturally when you start to look at testing in this way, what you're effectively doing is you're driving the conversation. You're saying, I would like a human to look at this part of this system for these vulnerabilities. And when you do that, you're sort of asking people to step away from their traditional methodologies. And I think, you know, you might have to be a little bit careful with how you approach the finding the right way to get them carried out. I mean, we've seen it happen we've literally seen all three approaches, you know, of various different businesses. Naturally, often when you start looking at testing from a change perspective and stop looking at it from a time period perspective, you know, annual's really common, but when you look at it from a change, it can get quite messy. So a lot of businesses do prefer to look internal for things like change tests. But it really is, you know, I think the best solution is to make sure you're well-resourced and you've got different things for different types. I mean, obviously, each of those three methods of acquiring human testers has their own strengths, individual of one another, you know, can run through them. Internal, you've got that person full-time and they deeply understand the business, right? But how easy is it for an enterprise to find security testers and you know, they're hard enough to find for the consultancies? Consultancy, you're going to get a fairly normal, rigorous approach, and it's standardized. And then, I mean, the crowd, obvious benefits. You know, you've potentially got you know, 10, 50, 100 people looking at your system and massively increasing the likelihood of making sure that, that everything that can be found is found and they're incentivized to do so. So lots to think about there, lots to play around with. So just as we summarize and close this one out, I think my main takeaway from this podcast is that security testing is changing. The way that we do security testing needs to change. It's been around for a long time, but the way we build systems, the way we change systems, it's getting a little bit out of control now, trying to keep up with it. And continuing to use humans in the way that we use them, I can't help but think it is crazily inefficient. And especially as we head into a world where things like artificial intelligence, LLMs, you know, you hear about this stuff all the time and it's just getting better and better and better. The only staple that we've got in a world, you know, I was InfoSec last week and I think one of the stands said something along the lines of better AI to combat AI, right? That step away from that crazy world for a second and where you end up is, bloody hell, humans are, human testing is kind of like the last line of defense, right? Because when you've really got, you know, AI integrated and all over the shop, human testing is going to be the thing that we rely on more and more to be that final check and make sure that it's not a tool tricking another tool, etc. So yeah, super important to get right, super relevant, but 9 times out of 10, it's not that businesses are getting wrong, it's just inefficient, and it could just be so much better for both the tester and the customer.
And I think my takeaway, you know, is context is king. Even small pieces of data that you as an organization already have and hoard, if shared with a security tester, could provide an exponential benefit to the way that they go about delivering that security testing. If you could share with them information about what vulnerabilities you know about, then you're not going to waste their time. If you could share with them areas that you're particularly concerned about, then, again, they've got things to focus on. And having that sort of, having that record of what's gone on recently will help make sure that your tester is only looking at the things that they should be looking at for the vulnerabilities that might actually be there.
Outstanding. So the topic for the next episode, before we leave you today, is how to scale a security testing program. Really, really looking forward to doing that one. And if you want to find us and all of the other podcasts we've done over the last few weeks, they can find them on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, or anywhere else you get your favorite platforms. Bye now.